where you'll learn to master the business of yoga. MBOM is a proud part of the Wander Barn Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Amanda Kingsmith. I'm a 500-hour registered yoga teacher, a yoga business coach, and a total business geek. Here at MBOM, you'll learn everything you need to know to create a sustainable yoga business by learning from myself and guests from around the world about how they built their yoga businesses. And about how you too can become a successful yoga teacher, studio owner, and much more. All right, let's dive in. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the MBOM podcast. I am super excited and grateful that you are here with me today, joining me for this episode of the show. I know you have lots of podcasts to choose from these days, so I'm really grateful that you are choosing to tune into this one. And today on the podcast, I am really excited to be joined by my friend, Nick Danu. Nick has been on the podcast twice before, once talking about websites, mistakes people make, and things that you can do instead, as well as talking about the business of yoga therapy. So we've had some amazing conversations prior to this conversation that we're having, and I'm really excited to have her back on the podcast. She's a yin yoga teacher, a yoga business mentor, and the founder of Yoga for Misfits. And in this episode of the show, Nick is sharing 7 ways to market your yoga business that aren't social media. And I don't know about you, but I've just been feeling so burnt out with social media and honestly a little bit discouraged with statistics and the fact that so many people just aren't seeing my posts. And while I'm not planning to get off social media, and I think it's a really great tool for us for our yoga business, it's not the only one. And so I was really grateful to have this conversation with Nick. She's been teaching long before social media existed, and she has some really amazing and mostly free or low cost tips to share with us today. And she also shares how to implement them effectively and lots of other good stuff. So this episode is jam-packed with good information and golden nuggets. So really excited for you guys to hear this. And just before we get there, I just want to give a little shout out to Offering Tree. Thank you to Offering Tree for sponsoring this episode of the show. You can learn more about Offering Tree at offeringtree.com/MBOM. You can get a little discount there. You can sign up for a demo. You can get 1 week free to try it out, see if it's for you. We're going to talk more about Offering Tree in just a little bit. And Nick is also going to share a little bit about Offering Tree as well. So you can hear more about the platform and then decide if it's for you. All right. That's all from me. I'm super stoked to get into this interview. So without further ado, here is Nick. Welcome to the show today, Nick. I'm really excited to have you here with me today.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you here. So you've been on the show twice before. So this is your third time, which might make you one of my most common reoccurring guests, which is pretty awesome. You were on the show in the fall of 2020 and then the spring of 2021. So I'm curious, it's been about a year and a half since we've connected on the show. Can you just start by kicking things off, sharing with listeners, you know, what you've been up to over the last, you know, approximately year and a half since spring of 2021?
Mm-hmm. Probably like most yoga teachers, trying to navigate this insanity that we've been going through in the last, 2.5 years. And just trying to find the balance of, you know, when are classes open again and which ones are on Zoom and all of that. So I've been, you know, doing that. I have less Zoom classes now than I did when, of course, everything was shut down and no one could go anywhere. More in person again, which is great. But I love the fact that I do have the Zoom classes and the ability to turn any of my in-person classes into a Zoom class if the need arises again. So I've been doing that. And what else? I recently created an on-demand video library. I did that through Offering Tree. Shout out to Offering Tree. Which I've been really loving because I felt like it really fit kind of a hole in my clients.
Amazing. Well, you've been up to so much good stuff in the last 18 months. So thanks for sharing that, and just really stoked for you with with the video on demand library, and glad that Offering Trees worked out and that the course I created was helpful and stuff like that. So if anyone needs any recommendations for that, we'll definitely have to send them your way. And I'll make sure I give you a chance later on to share a link for all of that. We can put in the show notes and whatnot. But I'm excited as always, because we have a really great topic. And I think this is one of the things that I love about having you on as a guest, is you have such a variety of experience and such a depth of knowledge. And when we started chatting about doing another episode together, you presented a lot of topics, all of which I was pretty stoked about. But one in particular that I really wanted to get into was just talking about marketing off social media. And I want to preface this with, I like social media. I think social media is a great tool, but I think it's like a tool in our toolbox. And I think that sometimes we forget that there are other tools in our toolbox, or we think like, oh, this is the main tool we should use, and we forget about all the others. So maybe we can start by just talking about, you know, for you, what has your journey been like with social media? Where did you kind of get the idea of like, hey, I could market off social media and that type of thing?
Sure. Well, first, I would say that I've been teaching since 2004, which doesn't sound that long until you do the math. And then it's like, oh, wow. Okay. And so there wasn't social media when I first started teaching. So I do have, and we'll talk about a bunch of them, a bunch of marketing things in my tool belt that don't involve social media at all. I joined social media personally, only originally on Facebook, because you needed to have a personal page in order to have a business page. And this was back when business pages actually still got traction. Like if people liked your page, they actually still saw your stuff, even if you weren't paying for ads. And so that's kind of how I got stuck in the Facebook trap. To be honest, if it wasn't for the Facebook groups, like the yoga teacher groups, I would leave Facebook. Like I really do not like being on Facebook. I pretty much go in, check out the groups, hang out with folks in the group, chat in the group, and then get out. I did used to really love Instagram, and I still like it if you're comparing it to Facebook, but I do find that since Facebook bought it, I'm starting to enjoy being on there less and less. And so that's kind of, I guess, how I feel personally about them. So many months ago, I don't remember how many, but there was this one day where Instagram and Facebook were down. Like you couldn't get on either. And I had scheduled time. I was doing regular meditations every Monday live on Instagram. And so I had, and on Facebook at the same time. And so I had set time in my schedule for that and then couldn't do it. And, you know, it wasn't like the end of the world. I was just like, oh, okay, I guess I'll go to the beach. But it really did get me start thinking about how I had scheduled like 40 minutes for that. And how much could I have gotten done marketing-wise in other channels with that 40 minutes? So I really started thinking about it. And here's what I've come to. Because we don't own social media, all of the hard work and beautiful posts that we do on there could potentially be shut down. And so that's kind of terrifying to think about all of the time I've spent doing these, like, not terrifying, that's a slight exaggeration, but not to mention they're constantly changing the algorithm, which I'm sure I'm not the only one who finds that completely exhausting.
Definitely
at the
time
not. Of recording, you know, not long ago. Not long ago, Instagram announced that they essentially want to be a video platform, because I guess they're trying to compete with TikTok and all the other things, and it's exhausting, you know? I mean, they started off as a picture sharing app, and now it's like, you know, and I'm not opposed to video, but, you know, it's just one more hoop that you have to jump through to try to get people to see your stuff. And that can be exhausting and time consuming, because, you know, you can't schedule a reel. You can make one and you can save it in your drafts, but you still have to go and, like, at least at this point, you know, make it so kind of thing. And I don't really like that. I like being able to pre-schedule my social media when I have the time to do it and then, you know, move on with my day kind of thing. So that's becoming a bit of an issue. And also I think sometimes we forget that actually social media is supposed to be social, that although it's great to announce what's coming up for you on social media, that actually the point of it isn't necessarily to sell to people. It's to connect. And we all have different goals with this, but like when I started using Instagram instead of personally, but professionally, it was a way to kind of inspire or help people feel seen, or sometimes to entertain. I'm not at all opposed to a funny meme here and there. And then somewhere that I kind of lost track of that. And I still do those posts, don't get me wrong. But I started using it to as a marketing tool. I'm not convinced to pay for ads, which is a whole other, I'm not willing to do that at this point. But unless you're paying for ads, I'm like, is this effective for marketing? It doesn't feel like it to me lately. So it just kind of got me thinking, you know, I feel like I can still use my social media, but that maybe it's best if I start spending my time in more empowering ways to market my yoga business that are the old school, time tested and true, and that I have some control over.
Yeah, I can 100% relate to everything that you just said. I feel like I've had a very similar journey with social media, and I have a couple different accounts, like business and personal. And I've just recently decided, like with my personal, you know, it's a private page. I'm not using it for business. It's very much just like baby spam at this point. And I just want it to keep in touch with my family and friends. Like I'm not trying to be an influencer. I'm not trying to get sponsorship deals. I'm not trying to get likes or follows. And I felt like, you know, having that has been just very nice for me to have that space. And it's become a social space where I just connect with my friends versus, you know, my business account feels like a business account. And I want it to be a social version of a business account, but it's kind of hard to find that balance. And I think that it's really easy to get caught up in, like, you know, I wasn't excited about making reels when reels came out. I don't really dance on, you know, I don't dance in front of the camera and post that on the internet. Like, no hate or judgment to anyone. Like, you should do you and what inspires you. But for me, I was like, this isn't my thing. And so I was like, what are people doing in my field if they're not, you know, dancing? Like, I'm not an account that posts practices and stuff like that. I'm a business account. And so a lot of the business accounts I saw were people, you know, pointing at texts. And I was like, no, I also don't do things like that. So I resisted reels for like a year until finally Canva came out with some cool templates. And I was like, okay, I think I can get down with some of these templates to do some of the things that we were doing in like kind of slide format and reel format. And the only reason I started doing that was because I thought, okay, it'll be a bit more fun. We can change things up and then the algorithm will work better. I was looking at the stats and I'm like, man, I've got like 4,000 people that follow me. And there's like a very small percentage of these people actually see what I'm up to, which is just disappointing and frustrating. And yeah, now Instagram's like, oh, we're a video platform. And I'm like, oh, F you. I'm not.
Yeah, I'm with you on the dancing and pointing. I had a couple yoga teacher friends tease me the first time they saw me do a pointing video. I have done the pointing ones, but I'm like sitting with my butt on the ground, like as if I would be meditating and pointing. I'm like, I'm not dancing on cue. No, this is not a thing that I'm going to do. And most of the ones that I have been, you know, doing the pointing, it's like they come across very kind of irreverent and almost a little tongue in cheek. And they have to, because like, how can you take that seriously? Like, how can I take sitting on the floor and pointing at imaginary words that aren't there yet seriously? Like, I just can't. So they do come across a little bit kind of cheeky, which is fine because it suits my personality, but they also take, like, that takes a fair bit of work, you know? And then the other thing is, I did this test at the beginning with Reels where I started just randomly testing different subject matter, different times of day and that I would post and different days of the week. And I would just randomly post up, but I would put in my phone just a little note saying like, okay, here's the time of day I posted it. Here was the subject matter and here's how many views it got. And you know what gets the most views for me has nothing to do with yoga. It's pictures of me feeding. I'm a crow whisperer. So I have a couple crows that I call my lovebirds that visit me when I go to the beach, and they'll take right. I feed all crows, but these two will take it right from my hand. And the videos of me feeding the crows have gone through the roof with my views. But the ones where I'm just practical yoga information about back pain don't seem to get nearly as much traction. So I guess you could say the sort of unpredictability about what's going to take off. After that experiment, I tried, I still don't know. Like I, for me, I've noticed if I post them quite late at night, which works well for me because I'm a night owl, they tend to do well. But I mean, it's so inconsistent. One time my partner and I were just watching a Bruce Lee movie for date night. And I just took a video of my computer screen with my phone because I think the little song was funny and posted date night. And that one took off like crazy. So then a week later, we were watching a different Bruce Lee movie. And I was like, all right, let's try this again. And it got like nothing. So this is what I mean by like, you're really kind of giving all of your control over to some random algorithm that, and I follow people that say they know the hacks for the algorithms, but I'm not convinced. So, you know, you can spend a lot of time on something, like you said, that like hardly any of your followers actually see.
Right. And I think that that's the thing that's discouraging, right? And like, especially for people who are starting out, I think you hear like, oh, I should start, you know, a yoga page or a business page for my social media. And it gets discouraging when you're working really hard to try to build your following and it feels like you're kind of like swimming upstream. So yeah, I feel like that kind of fully develops where we're going with this. And I just want to be very clear that like, if social media is your thing, there's no hate here. Like, I think that the idea of this is to just give more tools in the toolbox and talk about why we don't necessarily need to focus on social media or why we don't necessarily have to be on there, if that's kind of what you feel like. So maybe let's dive into some of those tools. I know, like you said, you know, you were teaching kind of pre-social media era. And obviously there's lots of other things that we can do with marketing that aren't social media.
Yeah. I want to reiterate what you just said. I am not saying get off social media. I'm not getting off social media anytime soon, although I sometimes dream of it.
yeah, same.
That's usually when I take a little social media break, right around that time when I'm like, so I'm not saying get off of it, but what I'm saying is you can choose to use social media, but I wouldn't make it your primary focus. Or if there are people listening out there who are like, God, I don't want to do social media, don't think that that's the only way that you can market your business, because it's not. In fact, it's not even really probably the most effective way. So I have several ideas that don't involve posting on social media. The first one is your website. And I know people might be like, what? Basic. But this is like super powered. If your website is well done and you are pretty clear on your niche and you make sure that your content serves that niche, you will show up in Google searches. And that's a great way to get eyes on your business. It's the only online home that you have control over. And it's a representation of you and your yoga business. And it can be hard at work for you while you sleep, teach, and live life. And you don't have to keep posting it and on it. And you don't have to worry about an algorithm. And if done well, people will find you. They'll see if you're a good fit or not. And then hopefully sign up for your email list. And also on that, I want to mention some people blog. And a lot of times people think when you blog that you have to be a writer. You don't. You can blog with a video. Like you can do a video, post it on YouTube, save it as private or whatever, embed the link, and then just talk a little bit about what you're going to do in that video or an audio. Like, I just want people to know that blogging doesn't always mean writing. But your website, I think, should be kind of your primary focus, because really we want all of these other ones that I'm going to talk about here to lead back to your online home of your website. And I know Amanda and I did an episode on effective websites. I think it was called five mistakes yoga teachers make on their website and what to do instead or something like that. So I'm sure you can link that in the show notes, but that will really give you kind of a good framework of like, is my website working for me or is it just kind of sitting there collecting dust virtually? So I think website number one. One just kind of free little tip that I'll toss in for a website that I don't think was in our previous interview is if you have a footer on your website, if you teach locally, make sure that your location is in the footer. Also, if you teach online, So for example, on the bottom of mine, it says that, you know, I teach these kinds of yoga classes. So I spell out my niche in there and that I'm in Victoria, British Columbia. And then I also say that I teach online, because that page then is searchable. Every page of your website, if it's in the footer by Google, it shows up over and over and over again. So that can be helpful. And I know that it's helpful because I've had clients where when they find me for privates or classes and I say, oh, how did you find me? They're like, oh, I Googled, you know, back pain yoga or yoga for back pain in Victoria and you showed up. So, and I haven't done a ton of SEO work. So sometimes just the little simple things can be effective. So I would say website would be number one.
Amazing. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. And you know, I'm completely on the same page with that. And yeah, I'll make sure there's a link for that other episode too, because I know we covered a lot of stuff there. And I've talked about websites a lot on the podcast. And I think listeners who have listened for a while know that I'm a big fan of that. And I think I really like how you framed it as like, you know, it seems maybe kind of blah, maybe kind of uninspiring, but it's like you build it and you can just do updates on it, you know, kind of irregularly, like quarterly, a couple times a year in terms of big updates, keeper classes, you know, up to date, that type of thing. And it's, like you said, a great place for people to discover you. And I think that you're way more discoverable on a website than you are on social media.
Totally. And one idea that I shared with one of my clients was that she has these, I follow her on Instagram, and she has these Instagram posts where her caption is, it's almost like a blog post. Like it's inspiring and it's long as they'll allow you to do, and sometimes continued in the comments. And like I said to her, she's like, oh, a blog, one more thing to do. I was like, no, actually just go to your Instagram account, take all of those beautiful posts that you've written, especially the ones that have gotten a lot of traction, and put that as a blog on your website. So at least it's got longevity there.
Yeah, for sure. A great way to repurpose your content, right? And you can do that vice versa too.
Yeah, exactly. And then the second one I have, and again, I can already sense the eye rolls that might happen. Your email list. I know sometimes we get sick of hearing this, but like, email list. But a website without an email form is sort of like a leaky bucket. So if you get people to your website, but you don't have a way to keep chatting with them, people are busy, they get distracted. They, you know, here's an example I often use. Let's say you move to a new city and you don't know any of the yoga places or teachers or anything. One of the first things you're probably going to do is start Googling yoga. And then you're probably that day, while you're having your chai or whatever it is, or your matcha, if you're like Amanda and I, you're going to find several different places and you're going to think, oh, okay, this is great. Okay, yeah, I'll check those out. And then you're going to like close your computer and get on with your life and get busy and forget about those. But if you were on a website that while you were there had a polite pop-up at some point that said, hey, are you new around here? And you could enter your email, you'd be a lot more likely to keep in touch with that studio or that teacher. So an email form, this gives you a chance to nurture your connections and build trust with your ideal student and offer content that is truly of service to them. I would say that for me, 80 to 90% of the registration from my classes and retreats comes from my email list. And then it also gives you a chance to nurture those relationships over time and really, you know, be of service. And that also your emails can also inform then your social media. So you use the word sort of repurposing. And one thing that I've become a huge fan of in the last few years is repurposing. Like I actually won't create content anymore that I can't use in at least three places. I'm just like not wasting my time. So it's like, you know, you could do a really great email that could turn into an abridged version, could be a social media post. So it's not like we have to add all of these things to our list. We just have to kind of figure out like, how would we tweak it for, you know, email versus social, or could I turn this email into a blog and elaborate on it? So that's number two is your email list. And I know that people are like, oh, yeah, email. But again, studies show, not just in yoga, kind of all over the place, that that's the number one way that people are going to find, are going to build that know, like, and trust factor with you and then become clients and then hopefully raving fans.
All right, studio owners or potential studio owners, this one's for you. Are you feeling overwhelmed by software that doesn't serve your business? When Offering Tree first grew their seed of an idea, they had you in mind, the studio that needs simple, efficient software that can be scaled to their business growth. We all know that time spent on admin is time away from our clients. We also know that money spent on complex solutions is a drain of resources. Let Offering Tree help. You can reach out to them for a no-commitment demo of their new studio software and learn if they might be the solution you've been searching for. With new studio features, including staff login, more reporting functions, text messaging for clients, and so much more. Check out what they have to offer or book a demo call at offeringtree.com/pricing. The right software can help you make more money and spend more time doing what you want to do with your business. And that's why I believe in Offering Tree and the difference their tools can make for yoga studio owners. Who doesn't want to spend more time with students and less time struggling to piece together software? I promise I won't be offended if you pause the show for the next minute to head on over to offeringtree.com/pricing to book a demo call. And of course, if you have any questions, make sure you reach out to me or to Offering Tree. All right, now back to the show.
Yeah, 100%. I just want to second what you said just about, like, you know, sales, registrations, that type of thing. I have done lots of the same posts between social media and email. And, you know, it's often quite quiet via social media. And I think part of what's hard is that Instagram doesn't actually allow you to put a link like on a post. Now it's nice because you can do some links on stories and you can put it in your bio, but it just means people have to show a little bit extra interest. Whereas like they've kind of already shown a bit extra interest by being on your email list, which means you filter them out as like a little bit more interested. And then they've got it right in front of them to click on, which I feel like, at least for me, I'm usually more in the headspace of like, I'm on email, I'm on my computer, I'm like in the position to actually sign up or buy something versus I'm taking a bathroom break and scrolling on my phone, you know?
Totally. Yes, totally. Oh, funny. And then the third one that I've got here is SEO or search engine optimization. And so really simply explained, that is, how Googleable, if that's a verb, you are. And of course, this could be a whole podcast on its own, and I'm not an SEO expert, but I do have a couple of little tips that will help your website pop up quicker. One is to have a Google Business Profile. The great thing about a Google Business Profile is that it's on Google, so they're more likely to show it to people. And you can get reviews and ratings. So you can, you know, ask your current students to, you know, go on your Google Business Profile and give you reviews. So there's that sort of, when somebody lands on your profile, there's already that kind of like built-in trust factor when they can see that you've gotten good reviews from your current students. I already mentioned optimizing your footer or blogging. And then you can also borrow other people's SEO, which we'll talk a little bit more coming up. But when you borrow other people's audiences, which we're going to talk about in a bit, that helps your SEO as well. So just making sure that you're doing a few little things to make sure that your website is searchable. I believe in niching. And I know that, again, this always elicits often another eye roll from people. But really, I think it really helps you to understand what content to create for your people. And with regular emails and whatever regular is for you, sometimes we hear this statistic of like, you should email your people every week. I don't really believe that. I think if you have like quality content every week, yes. If you are going to have to struggle and like lose sleep to create quality content to send to your people every week, then, you know, do it every 2 weeks or once a month. I just think that when people sign up, you should be clear about how often they're going to hear from you so that they know. But then at that point, like I'm kind of like an every other week. I even said when people sign up, it says you can expect to get something from me every 2 to 3 weeks, maybe more often if something special is going on. So like I'm really setting the stage really clearly. And then you can send them regular free content, and it doesn't always have to be your content. I like to think with email, the 80-20 rule. So 80% send them good quality content. 20% of the time you're like, oh, hey, I have this thing that you can sign up for. And then the other guideline I would say with email, and this is one that I used to make the mistake of, is I would have like all the things in the email, like everything in the kitchen sink and this, and it was just like too many things, too many links. People would get overwhelmed and they would just close the email down. So if you can stick to one thing per email, that'll make it a lot simpler, and you'll be more likely to have people actually sign up for things when you send out the emails that require sign up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for touching on that, because I do feel like all of that's important. And yeah, I think finding like the rhythm that works for you, your business, how much stuff you have on your plate is really good. I know I did monthly for a long time, and now we do weekly. And part of that is because I have, you know, help with my business and stuff like that. But I just felt like, you know, in the times that I didn't have help, it was really hard to try to think about getting a weekly email out on top of all my other responsibilities. And now I really like that we get to share about the podcast episode every week. And then when we have other things going on, I can, you know, maybe share a second email and stuff like that. But I do feel like it can be very overwhelming. Like if you sign up for something and then you're getting like one email a day or even a couple emails a day, that just feels like a lot. Like I feel like for me, that's one thing that will get me to unsubscribe right away. So I love the idea of just like disclosing that. And then to the point about SEO, yeah, I think this is like something great to kind of just learn about, because it really can help you kind of get to the top of the list on Google, so that when somebody Googles, like, for example, you know, yoga for back pain in Victoria, you come up. And I think you can just go in an incognito browser and Google something about yourself and see, you know, do I show up for this? What kind of keywords am I ranking for? And, you know, obviously this isn't an episode directly on SEO, but we do have one episode with one of the co-founders of Offering Tree. Actually, it's a couple of years old, but great episode. And then there's also lots of resources out there to help people with SEO. So if this is something that people are excited about, like definitely, you know, look into it a little bit more in depth.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, I'll give one more SEO hack before we move on to something. If you've got friends that really love and adore you, just get them to randomly search out keywords. And then when they find your website in the list, to click on it and hang out on your website, surf the pages a bit. That actually, you know, is just a kind of a way to show Google that like, oh, hey, when people are searching for this term, they're actually landing on my website. And, you know, now this is only for the friends that were willing to waste, you know, 10 minutes of their life just hanging out on your website, you know, searching around. But I think it can be really helpful. This is another reason why having a blog can be helpful, because if you write a blog and then you send that blog out to your email list, but don't put the whole blog in the email, you put like a snippet and then say, you know, to read the full post, that again starts to bring more and more traffic back to your website, which Google's like, oh, people are hanging out here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for sharing that.
Okay. So the next one again might be a bit of an eye roller. Some of these methods are so simple that people are going to be like, duh. But the question is, are you doing them? So those of you that might be like, yeah, whatever, website, email, I know. But are you actually doing them? Because I wasn't. I know better, and I was wasting time on methods that weren't as effective. So here's another one, word of mouth. So referrals are the most overlooked, but in my opinion, effective way to find new students. When an existing friend sings your praises, students are way more likely to check you out and sign up, and it helps you find more students like your favorite students. So there's different ways that you can do this. So for example, I was a hairstylist before I became a yoga teacher, and I had a very clear referral program. So it was like, after this many people that you've referred, they got something for free. So it was like a way to actually give them an incentive to refer. Now that may not work as well for yoga, because it's a little harder to track and you know, might not feel quite the same, but you could create a referral program, maybe with a free gift as like a thank you. So whether that's a free class or an eye pillow or whatever it might be, something just small and nice to say, hey, thanks. This is what you get when you refer people. It could be as simple as a thank you, like a little card or an email or even a text. I've had somebody recently who I've referred people to reach out via email and just say, hey, you sent me so-and-so and so-and-so. Just wanted to say thanks. Your faith in me means a lot. You know, like just taking a moment when somebody does send you somebody else to give them a thank you. Whether you want to give a free gift or not might depend on what it is. Like if you're doing a private program, private sessions, you could probably afford a lie pillow. But if it's like they referred you to your weekly class, then maybe you send a nice card or an email or a text. Just as a way to say, you know, I appreciate you. One thing that I have started doing is leaving it as a call to action at the bottom of my emails and blog posts, and hell, why not even your social media posts? So instead of ending your blog or ending your social media, I'm now leaving a little PS. If you know a friend that this might help, why not send it to them? You know, there's that old sharing is caring, you know? So sometimes people would love to share you with their friends and family, but they don't know that actually that sometimes they just don't know that you even are taking new clients. So just a way to say at the bottom regularly of your post, you know, hey, why not share this with somebody? Just last night, in fact, I had a student say, because I'm offering a free sample class, which is my next point. I do this quarterly. I offer a free friends and family class. So it's a class for, and it's on Zoom. It's for anybody who's new to my list. Everyone gets the first class free. Anybody who has been a client for a while, I consider it a thank you. And then anybody who wants to invite people to try out one of my classes, it's a perfect opportunity. And I actually had somebody last night say, oh, how you have your sample class coming up. I'd love for my sisters to come and check you out. I think they'd love your class. How do I do that? And I was like, just forward them the email that says, hey, here's the announcement about the free class. So obviously I missed the boat on that email. On the bottom, I should have had a, hey, share this with your friends. So you'd be surprised how effective that is. Just asking people to share your content. It's a tiny little thing, but it's super effective. And then the last way I would say that's really good to get good referrals is to connect with other professionals who serve the same people as you and build a referral network. So this is something that has been taking me a little time because I moved provinces, but back home in Calgary, I had two massage therapists that I went to. I had an acupuncturist I went to. I had a naturopath. So I was their client. But also over the course of time, we got to chat about what I did and who I helped. And so it was easy for me then to say, hey, you should come to a class sometime and check it out. So other professional networks, that's a great way, whether it's in person, locally, or virtually, that you can connect with. If you work virtually, that can help pursue referrals. It's also, and vice versa, you can send them referrals. It's also a great way to get more of your ideal clients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that is really great. And I just wanted to comment on that and say, like, I do feel like sometimes it can feel really awkward to ask somebody like, hey, you know, can you tell friends and family about this? Or do you know of anyone who might be interested? But I think that some people just don't know, like from their perspective, maybe they think like, your business is just really flourishing and you're like jam-packed with clients and that type of thing. And they don't realize like, hey, you have new space for new clients, or it would be really helpful for you to get more traction and more visibility if they could share something for you. And so I do really love, you know, whether you do it incentive-based, like you mentioned, or just do an ask for that. I think that can be really great. I know I'm in like little podcasting community. And one of the things we talked about when we met a couple of months ago was just the simplicity of asking people to leave reviews, like on the show saying, you know, just like we're talking right now for the show. It's like, hey, if you like the show, can you leave me a positive review? Like that helps me a lot to get discovered. And it's interesting because I've done different moments of you know, asking people that and people will be like, oh yeah, for sure. Like I've been listening for, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And I like never thought to review your show. Like I'll tell friends about it, you know, send me an email or like a DM about what they liked of a certain episode, but just never thought to review the show. And it's just this little thing that makes a big difference for me. And yeah, that just kind of came to mind as you were talking. So I think that this is definitely, it can feel uncomfortable, but I think it's a really important thing to do.
I totally agree. And I do know it feels uncomfortable. I have a bit of a kind of casual and funny and cheeky sense to me. So I do it really casually so that it doesn't feel quite so weird. Like I think one of my newsletters, it was as simple as, so, hey, I think you're pretty cool. I think you think I'm pretty cool because you've been coming to classes. That got me to thinking, maybe your friends and family might think I'm pretty cool and I might think they're pretty cool, you know? And that was how I promoted my friends and family class. Like it was very casual. It wasn't like this big formal thing. It's just like, hey, I made this thing, you know, invite people. There's ways to do it for sure. I know what you mean though. It can feel really weird, but like you said, people don't know that you're accepting new clients unless you raise your hand and go, hey, I'm accepting new clients. Sometimes like you said, Amanda, they just assume that your roster's full.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. We're ready for the next one. Mm-hmm. I know I can sense this is going to be another eye roll. You're ready for it, teachers. Posters.
I love posters. I'm so glad this is on the list.
Okay. So 80% of the new people that show up to my classes, whether it be online, remember I said online or in person, saw my posters. Oftentimes yoga teachers think they only need a poster when they have an event. I have a retreat. I have a workshop. I should make some posters. No, dear teacher. Always a poster. Always. A poster that's general, not so general. It says who you are, who you teach, and where you teach. And then your website. It doesn't have to be fancy. I've got some tips on like do's and don'ts. But I can tell you, I've had people walk up to me on the street and be like, oh, hey, you're a yoga teacher. I've never met them. And they're like, I've seen your posters. They're so great. I teach what I call yoga for misfits. I've had people come to my classes and say, I saw your poster. You had me at misfit. So I cannot stress enough, whether you're doing local or online, you can use posters still either way. How effective a well-placed color poster is. If you teach online during COVID, I tested this out because I was like, well, I'm going to go around and poster, but like, I'm not teaching anything in person. So I just changed on the bottom of my poster to say online. And then when things started opening back up, I made it say in person and online. And you'd be surprised how many locals I have that come to my online classes. So you can still poster, even if you work primarily online. There are some really common mistakes and misunderstandings that yoga teachers have about posters. So I'll touch on some of those because having a poster that isn't designed well isn't going to be effective. And then you're going to think that Nick chick was out to lunch. She doesn't know that posters don't work, but it might just be the way you're postering. So poster misunderstandings. First of all, most teachers only poster if they have a special event coming up. You should always have a general poster about your business, what you do, who you serve, and how to get a hold of you. For me, it's the number one driver of new students to my website and my classes. Number one, more than SEO, more than social media, number one, posters. But how do you make your poster stand out in a sea of posters? Well, first of all, make it full size, so 8.5 by 11. Make it full color. If you're niched, and if you aren't niched, I would recommend niching, but make sure it's niched. Make your images very clear. I would ideally think an image of you and or your ideal student. So I physically represent my ideal student because my ideal student is essentially me before I found yoga. So like I look like my ideal students. So it's easy for me to use my image. It does feel a little weird at first, but you get over it. Or you can use an image of the people that you teach. And this one's important because my first posters were, they were still effective, but they weren't as effective as they could be. And I actually had one of my regular students point to a picture. I had just like a stock image, actually, of like a classroom, and point to one of the pictures on my poster and say, "I don't like that picture. I would never wear that to a yoga class." And it was because it was somebody quite thin in a sports bra. And I was like, mental note. So find different pictures. So find pictures that are of your ideal student. Maybe if it's group classes you're teaching, you get a good shot of like, you could even do your own classes if your own students, if they're willing to sign a media waiver, you can do that. But clear images of you and your ideal student. Make sure your website is clearly listed. I can't count how many times I'm looking at a poster and I'm like, okay, where do I find this person? Like, I can't find the website. And then the other tip I'll give with posters is to build relationships with local businesses that have poster boards. So, for example, there was a brunch place that I always used to go to. I was just a regular there. I just loved their brunch. And they happened to have posters, so a poster spot, so I'd put up posters. But because I was a regular there, and this has happened at several locations, probably at least three I can think of, because I was a regular client there, they would give priority to my posters. So when they were clearing the poster board of events or whatever, inevitably one or two of the servers would say, no, but leave Nix up. And this was because I had spent the time to actually build a relationship with them because I was a customer. So I'm not saying artificially go out and eat in a bunch of places you don't like, but like if there are places, coffee shops, wherever that you go all the time and they see, and you ask them and then they see your poster, they're going to recognize, especially if your face is on your poster, they're going to recognize that that's you. And so they're more likely to keep your posters up or to give them priority. So that's a little hack to make them a little bit more sticky, because posters can be covered quickly, but they're also really, really cheap advertising. Like, I think actually of all the things we've talked about so far, this is the only one that would cost any money, and it's pretty inexpensive. So I say this often to my clients, and they kind of roll their eyes. I'm like, posters. And they're like, yeah, but I don't have a workshop coming up. It doesn't matter. Create an all the time poster about who you are, who you serve, what you help with them, make it clear, use great images, full color, clear typeface, make sure your website's visible, and then put those everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. I love that. One of the studios that I worked for in Canada, in Western Canada, I guess you're from Western Canada, so you know, I don't know why. Sometimes my brain is like, I don't want to just say the small town and then like people have no idea. But anyways, the studio that I worked for in Canada, they always did posters in the town. And I feel like it was the same way, like whether it was tourists coming in or locals discovering something, we had lots of different things that we put around town and just really thought about like, where are our clientele hanging out in the town? So it's not like we just put posters on every single board around town, but just thought about like, where are the people that we want to attract to yoga? And we would often get like, oh yeah, I heard about this event, or I heard about this class, or, you know, this teacher, because I saw a poster while I was at X coffee shop, you know, having my coffee. And I do think that some people think that this is a bit outdated, especially if you compare it with social media, but I do feel that it's a really great way to connect with your community.
I feel like that's common, like what you just said, that people think, oh, why would I do posters, you know, when there's social media? Well, when you do social media, you can't guarantee any eyes are on that. Like, we have algorithms to deal with, right? Like I said, most of my new students, when they come to a class and I'm like, oh, hi, you're new. How'd you hear about me? Poster. And then the thing is too, if you poster in several locations, they really get used to seeing, oh, there's that poster again. Oh, there. And it starts to register in their mind that, like, you know, repetition, right? Whereas, I mean, you can post on social media all you want, but you don't know that anyone's actually seeing it, sadly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, exactly. 100%.
And you can get creative with posters. I mean, I've done that, like you said, that just kind of really think about, like, where do my students frequent, like what businesses and things like that. I've also gone into, if you have a neighborhood specific class, I've gone into that neighborhood and have been really creative with postering. Now, I will say, please check your local bylaws. This is my disclaimer, so I don't get blamed for this, but I have postered inside washroom stalls downtown because there wasn't a lot of places in Calgary when I lived there to poster downtown. Did the poster last beyond one day from them cleaning? No, but I probably saw it. Probably 30 people saw it before then. So again, check your local bylaws. You don't have to be quite as much of a renegade with posters as I am, but also don't be afraid to get creative. A lot of people will say to me, well, there's no poster board where I'm at. And I went through a neighborhood I lived in where they had wooden telephone poles. And I walked up and down the alley where pulling out from their garage every morning and driving out to get to the road. And I put the posters on the wooden pole right where they would have to look to see if oncoming traffic was coming at car height. So like, get creative. You can find lots of ways. Get creative with posters.
I love that. Amazing. I think we have one or two more before we wrap up. One or two tips. Okay, cool. Let's dive into them.
Borrowing other people's SEO. So large online platforms are more likely to show up in SEO than the little guys. So listing your classes, whether they be in person or virtually, on things like Eventbrite or Kijiji, or in Victoria, we have one here called, I just forgot what it is, Use Victoria, which is kind of like our local version of Kijiji. So on Eventbrite, you can set your class up so that they have to register there, but you can also just put an external link to get them to your website to sign up. But what that does is it gets more eyes on your events and your classes that you wouldn't find otherwise, because people wouldn't have known of you. People are often will go on to Eventbrite and actually just search out events. And then same thing with like Gigi and, you know, whatever ones you have locally, those are free. Like, it's free to do that. It costs you nothing but a few minutes of your time. And if you just have a good kind of paper document where you keep kind of your class descriptions and stuff, you can just cut and paste and add a good image, and it takes hardly any time at all. I did this once or twice just as a test. And as soon as I listed my back pain classes and went incognito and searched out back pain and in my area, my Use Victoria ad popped up number one. So that showed me that, okay, this is actually really going to work. And you can do this also, this extending your SEO by borrowing other people's audiences. So guest posting on other people's blogs, or writing articles for publications, like I've written several for Elephant Journal, writing content for other people's newsletters, or being interviewed on podcasts, for example, is another great way. I will bet you that if you go to your local chiropractor, if you happen to work with people that's a fit for, it is for me, or your massage therapist or whoever it is, your nutritionist, whoever you work with, and said, hey, do you have any content for your newsletters? I will bet you a whole bunch of money that they will not say no, because every business, especially if they're an in-person business and they're working day to day with clients all day, knows they need to send out newsletters, but it gets shoved down to the bottom of their list. And they only send out newsletters when there's some sort of a change with their hours or their schedule. They're not nurturing their audience because they don't have time. So if you can craft something super helpful for their audience and say, hey, how would you feel about me sending you something to put in your newsletter? Here's what I'm thinking, and here's why I think it would be helpful. I will bet you anything, they're going to be like, yes, please. I know from experience, they'll be like, when can we do that? So, and that's a great way to get really kind of a niche audience that you're not even familiar with, right? Imagine if you can get your whole massage therapist email list just by writing an article. So that's a really good way. Being interviewed on podcasts is a great way, especially, you know, for example, I'll use some examples. I have a friend and a student who is a pre-postnatal. That's her niche. And so, I mean, there's got to be 1,001 mommy podcasts out there. Like, think about some ways that you can talk about what you do and how they help people. Find that hyper niche podcast and then send them a little note saying, hey, I'd love to be on your podcast. Here's what I can offer your community. That's very important. And I'm sure that you probably have done a podcast or something think you did a class actually at one point, or a workshop on how to pitch podcasts. So you want to do it with some skill and some grace, but podcasts are a great way, again, of borrowing other people's audience. And then I have one last one.
Yeah. And I do have a workshop on that. So if anyone's interested, it is on my website. It costs like $25 to watch the replay. And it's with not just myself, it's with three other podcast hosts. So we've got lots of good tips for you if you are looking to kind of get in the podcasting game in terms of from the side of like pitching as a guest.
And the thing I love about being a guest on podcasts is that, yeah, there's some preparation in the beginning because I obviously have to have a good topic and I have to be kind of organized about what I'm going to talk about and I have to pitch. But then after the interview's done, I'm done. Like all I have to do is share it after that, you know, it's like, which is the easy part, right? It's easy to like share it with your email list and post it on social media. Whereas when I write an article, which I also do, I have to write it and then I have to get someone else to look at it to double check my editing. And then I have to submit it. And then there might be more editing it. Do you see what I'm saying? Like there's just so many more steps. But with a podcast, once you're the guest and you've done your interview, like your work is done other than, you know, sharing it out and sending it to everybody saying, hey, look at this great interview I did. I think we all know, anyone who listens to podcasts knows the first thing you do that you love, you go through all their old episodes and you start downloading and you just like binge. So the great thing about doing a podcast interview is that anytime someone discovers that new podcast, your episode is going to get listened to again and again by fans, new fans of that podcast. So it's not like posting on social media where now it's going to disappear in the algorithm and no one ever finds it again. It's got like a lasting impact.
Yeah, 100%. It's one of the things that I really love about this platform too. And yeah, I really love that tip. And yeah, let's dive into the last one. What's the last tip you've got for us?
The last one is, and this is not my term, so I'm going to give credit where credit's due. This is Tad Hargrave, Marketing for Hippies, who talks about these being hubs. So if you don't know what a hub is, the hub is the center of a wheel. And if you picture in your mind a wheel, the hub is kind of the person who is the connector, right? Like they know all the people locally in a community that can help with whatever. And so getting in touch with a hub is a great way to get new exposure. So I'll use a prenatal example again. For example, there was a store here until recently called Mothering Touch. That's the perfect example of a hub because moms are going there. Doulas know about it. Prenatal yoga teachers know about it. People who specialize in prenatal nutrition know about it. So the store itself is sort of like the center of the wheel. And when you connect with the center of that wheel and you're like, do you know anyone else that I should connect with? You know, like this is who I do pre-postnatal network. Do you know anybody else that you think I should connect with? And they're going to have other people in their mind like, oh yeah, you should check out this doula, or you should check out this holistic nutritionist who works with expectant moms and new moms, or et cetera, et cetera. I think you get the idea. So there's usually somebody in each kind of niche community, or somebodies if you live in a larger area, that are sort of known for being like the center of a wheel and that know all of the other people in that community. And if you can connect with that person, you're definitely going to be starting to connect with, especially if you're just really, you know, you don't want to do it in a way where you're like, oh, hey, can I take you out for lunch and pick your brain and then be really kind of sleazy and smarmy about it? But if you're just really authentic with like, I'm looking to connect with more businesses and solopreneurs that also serve this same audience, do you have any recommendations of people I should check out? It's a great way to meet other professionals that are serving your students that you can then connect with and create that referral network with. And so that might be totally easy and organic. Like if you were pregnant and you had a massage therapist that specialized in prenatal, well, there you've got one right there already. And some might be a little bit more cold, meaning you don't have a connection yet. So that one takes a little more time and investing in. But one thing to mention just is that hubs are busy. So respect their time. Focus also on what you can offer them, because now you're a resource for them if they're a hub, right? If you go in and you say, I'll just use the prenatal example again. I teach pre and postnatal, and here's where my classes are. And you know, you could even do a in the case of a store, you could even offer to do a class in that store. So finding the people that are already connecting not only to your clients, but also they're connecting to all the other people that serve your clients. And this is really about relationship building. So it's a bit more of a slow marketing thing, but it also can be way more effective because when a hub recommends you to somebody, there's already a bit of a stamp of approval there. So if I go somewhere and say to my chiropractor and I say, hey, do you recommend any other massage therapists? I'm already going to be more likely to check out that massage therapist because my chiropractor recommended them. So it's a little bit more of less of a cold way to find people. There's already sort of an unspoken approval of you when somebody who's a hub recommends you.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate that one. And I think I just want to remind people too, that like when we are building our business, like we need to be playing the long game, not the short game. And I think that this is where so many of these tips come in. And I think that what kind of the internet has done for us, which has been a beautiful thing, has kind of given us this like really quick, you know, sense that things happen really quick. And I think that that's something social media does for us. I mean, it's like you reload your page, there's more, you know, you can like it really quick, you can engage really quick. Everything happens in this like really quick environment. And I think sometimes we get discouraged when it's like, oh, I didn't get as many likes or, you know, blah, 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 as many follows. And then we try these other routes and we're like, oh, well, this is going to take like months and months, maybe even years to cultivate. And it's like, well, that's kind of what it takes to have a like long-term thriving, successful business is like working with clients over time and being in your community and serving your people and building a network and building referrals. Like it doesn't just happen overnight. And I think that that's something I just want to kind of remind people with as we wrap up here.
Yeah. And what I would say too, is that I've given you a ton of information here, and what can happen when you get a lot of information is you can get a little overwhelmed and then end up not doing any actions because you don't know where to start. So in closing with all of this, I would say pick one of these and pick the easiest one for you to start right now. And start putting that into place. And then when that just becomes kind of smooth and effortless for you, because you've just been doing it, then add another one and add that slowly and continue to do that until that one becomes easier, effortless, and then continue. And of course, not all of these will be a fit for all people. Some of them will resonate more with others. But what I would love for you not to do, please, dear teacher, is listen to this and then be overwhelmed and think, oh crap, there's so much that I have to do, and just not do any of it. Just pick one. Pick the one that was like, huh, I never thought of that. I could do that. That doesn't sound overwhelming. And just start there and be consistent with it. Schedule it into your schedule. Once that becomes effortless, then it's no longer something you have to remember to do or that feels awkward or weird, or then pick another. Luckily, the great thing about podcasts is you can just like save it and you can re-listen to it and pick a new one when you feel like you've kind of accomplished one of them, because I love having information, but I don't want you to get stuck in overwhelm mode and do nothing and just keep randomly posting on social media and hoping it works.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I really love that. And I think that that's the perfect place to wrap up with this. But before we go, I do want to give you a chance to share where people can go to find you. I know you do some mentorship and some work with yoga teachers. So if anyone wants to dive in more with this, you know, let them know where they can find you, contact you, all that good stuff.
Yeah. I mean, of course, I'm going to say the best place to find me is on my website. And, I'm sure Amanda will have a link, but it's nykdanu.com/teachers. That's the best way to find me. Usually when I do offer a live workshop like this or the other ones that I've done, I will add them actually as something that you can buy. Like Amanda, you said you have your previous one with pitching podcasts, that I'll be having those that you can just, you know, you can buy the workshop and watch it even if the workshop is over. And then I also do live workshops as well.
Amazing. Yeah. Thank you for that. We'll make sure there's a link for that on the show notes, of course. And yeah, just appreciate your time and energy with this and for sharing all these amazing tips. You're always such a wealth of knowledge, Nick.
Well, thanks for having me back. I feel honored to be in the three-time club.
I'm stoked that you are in the three-time club. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for tuning in for this episode of the podcast. To find links, notes, resources, and everything mentioned in today and all episodes of the show, you can head on over to mbomeyoga.com. You can find the podcast and myself on Facebook and social media at Mastering the Business of Yoga. And I would love for you to join the private Facebook community, Yoga Business Badasses. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, please make sure you reach out to me at info@mbomeyoga.com. And last of all, if you enjoyed this episode of the show, please make sure you hit subscribe and leave a review for the podcast. It would mean the world. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next week. Namaste.